All right, we are back, and you are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. Thanks for tuning in. It's our Mother's Day special. I don't know if I've mentioned that too many times today. I always feel weird about Mother's Day because I lost my mom when she was 21, and my kids got older, and I said, I ain't your mom. You take care of things. I checked out. I'm a horrible father.
No, you're everything. The best dad.
Earlier in the show, we had Candace Cameron Bure play DJ in Full House. She's been in every Hallmark movie imaginable.
Ever.
Dr. Christy Funk. She's author of Breasts, The Owner's Manual. That was a fun interview.
Mm-hmm.
And Mandy and Kevin, just spoke with them. Wow. Can you imagine? I mean, to have both of them on at the same time is the real dynamic there. Hi, my name's Kevin. I beat this woman almost to death. Hi, my name's Mandy. You know, they're together. Bizarre stuff. Lorelai Backman is about to join us on the show. She's an author, freelance writer, musician, and she also, well, she doesn't relate to the whole warm and fuzzy Hallmark moments when it comes to Mother's Day and her own mother, but she's found peace and self-acceptance despite a difficult family dynamic. And she's also, you know, in her own journey, she's recently moved away from her family's Mormonism in an effort to find meaning and value system that is true to her core beliefs. Of course, we've had her brother on the show numerous times. Tal is his name. And poor widow Tal was sick today, so he got his dad to send a note in to the show, and he's not here today. He was going to be here.
Nice chicken noodle soup.
Some chicken noodle soup. If anybody has any chicken noodle soup out there, can you please send that over to Tal Backman? Lorelai, are you at home in your southern Alberta, I don't know, prairie ranch place that you live?
I am.
I know that you are a member of a family that has a lot of spotlight on it. How do you feel about the spotlight?
Oh, I think I must have missed that genetically somehow. I'm a quiet Backman.
Well, I don't know about that, but this Mother's Day is tomorrow, and you know, you and I were chatting earlier about the dynamics of your world and your family, and I just said you've got to share this journey on my show because the way you speak about things, you know, you have this great combination of being brutally honest with a tinge of grace, not a tinge, a lot of grace.
Thank you.
And I don't know how you do it. So, because if I had gone, you know, and I think that's what we all do when we hear someone's story, we put ourselves in their shoes and we go, man, if that was me, what would I do? And your story is so interesting when it comes to your mom. So just to help our listeners kind of get up to speed on why Mother's Day doesn't, you know, make you get all tingly, help us understand the dynamics between you and your mom a little bit, please.
Okay. Well, I lived back and forth during my parents' separation, and which was around the years that I was 8, 9, 10, and then they divorced when I was 10. And I viewed my mother as this, I mean, many of us would at this age, all wise, all competent, loving bonfire of the home. And my mother was a very adept homemaker, a very, you know, very, I would say, tactical in running an organized, efficient household with all of these children and a husband that was away a lot when my dad was traveling on the road. So I viewed her with a lot of admiration. And when my parents divorced, of course, in my 10-year-old mind, as everything started to fall apart, it was difficult to get a reading on what was actually happening because it was coming through a childhood filter. It was coming through a child's eyes. And so, you know, when they went to court and their assets were divided and a judge divided the children up, and my father had remarried, and so the courts favored that scenario at that time. This was in the early 80s. And we had all assumed, I had assumed, that I would probably live with my mother. There were six children, and only my oldest brother had been living consistently with my dad at that time. But, you know, we lived about three blocks away from each other, my parents. So we went back and forth often, and it wasn't very traumatic for us because we could ride bikes and see them both, and we understood that they weren't together. But because my mother had anticipated getting custody of all of her children and it didn't work out that way, she was hurt and she was angry and I would say scorned and felt somewhat obliterated by the whole situation. You mentioned being a family that's in the spotlight. That's difficult anyway, but when you are in the media and it's in the local newspapers and the school counselors are interested in a little tidbit of information if they can get one from you and the neighbors talk, it puts you all under a microscope in an intensely painful period of your life. And, you know, we were living on the Canada-Washington border on the West Coast. And my mother left. Instead of staying in close proximity to her children, she left. And in all honesty, that was her plan beforehand. She was going to move to a different state where she had family and support of her brother and her parents and things like that. And that had been her plan. However, you would imagine that with an extenuating circumstance, like a court ordering that four of your children were going to your ex-husband and two were going with you, which was how it was decided. The oldest and youngest sister were ordered to go with my mother, and the other four of us were ordered to go with my dad and my stepmother, that you would stay in close proximity and visit on the weekends, the way most of us do when a family breaks up. But she put the four of us in the car and drove us to my dad's house and unloaded us in the driveway and drove away. And that was her way of, I guess, trying to cope with the tragedy of what had happened and the unexpectedness of what had happened. And with fight or flight, she just took the flight and she left. And we were ordered to visit three times a year from then on. But aside from that, we didn't see her.
Okay, so let me throw out a trigger word.
Sure.
Abandonment. How does that sit with you?
You know, to be honest, before we chatted about this, I've never considered myself an abandoned child. I know that that will sound surprising, but in my 10-year-old paradigm, I thought, well, this terrible thing has happened and some of the people I love have gone away because a bad judge somewhere decided this. But I never took into account that my mother might have said, oh, we're going to have to do an overhaul of the plans here so that I can see the children and we'll be closer. It took into adulthood, Drew, to be able to look at that and say, I am now that age. I am now in that position. I am now going through a divorce and have children of my own. And the litmus test here is for me to stay the course no matter how badly I want to escape what I'm feeling, not my children, but what I'm feeling and how painful this is and how difficult this is the real kind of test of an honorable mother, in my opinion. And so I never looked at myself as a victim. I looked at myself as a person who, here is what life has handed me. What can I figure out? What resource can I draw from to pattern my life after? Mm-hmm. As a woman, as a mother, as a female, what resources can I dig and find?
How are you like your mother?
I run a pretty tight ship, and I think I learned that from my mother. I have five children myself, and I find comfort and security in order. Not perfectionism, but order. And I have loved the years that I was a stay-at-home mother with my young children, and my mother really did. That was the highest calling anybody could have, and I... You know, despite going to university, my mother never did, but for me to do that and to pursue an advanced degree and constantly push myself academically was more of a time and seasons thing because I really loved keeping the home fires burning. And I do feel like if you have a beautiful, warm, loving home environment, you are arming your partner and you're arming your children with what they need to be successful because they're not going to get the love and the hugs and the reassurance from the world. That's the world of hard knocks. But if there is somewhere to come home to where they feel loved and adored unconditionally, that whole schema came from my mother in a way. And so that's been a tremendous blessing in my life. There's a lot of things to be learned from that.
Well, okay, so during this conversation, I'm hearing you sort of say in these words that, no, I'm not a victim. I really, the abandonment thing really, I don't know, you know, I learned that sort of later. And I only sort of figured that out as I compared myself at my age to her age and where I was at as a mother, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess my thinking along the lines here is that, you know, you wouldn't do what your mom did. So how does that awakening impact your current relationship? I mean, you know, we all come to this point, Lorelai, where at some point in our life we look at our parents and that veneer gets kind of cracked or shattered and we see them as, you know, broken people who do dopey stuff as opposed to my mother and my father and that kind of. I don't think you have to actually say it that way, but yeah, that helps. So I don't know. Is there a question here, Drew, at any point in time? Yes. It must have been hard to not look upon your mother with a little bit of disdain and go, seriously, how could you make that choice?
Yes, that's true. And it's not fair to say unilaterally, oh, I've never been a victim. Have I felt a hole? Have I felt a loss from that? Absolutely. And that realization came in my 30s. When I was going over everything that had happened, and I was thinking, if I can get a moment alone with mom and really talk to her about this, I'm going to understand it firsthand, and I'm going to put myself in her shoes. And I've read every book I can get on mothering. By the way, not a lot of books on mothers that choose to leave. A lot, almost zero.
Right.
There's literally almost zero. There are, you know, loss of mother to illness or long-term caring for a mother or the, you know, emotionally unavailable mother, but not a mother who just chose to leave. So that moment came in my 30s and I was having one of my children and I called my mother and I said, would you be willing to come and help out when I have the baby? And she said, yes. And during that visit, after I had the baby and was home from the hospital, there was a moment at my kitchen sink where I thought, this is it. This is my moment of truth. I'm going to get my closure. I'm going to move on. I'm going to fill this gaping void. And I looked at her and I said, surely if you could have known the effect that it would have had on the four of us for you to get in the car and drive away that day, surely you would do it all over. And she looked me dead in the eye and said, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't change a thing. I know I did the right thing.
So you said to her, surely you wouldn't do the same thing again. Surely you would have made a different choice.
Yep.
And she said, no, I would have done the same thing. Wow.
I would have done exactly the same thing. And I thought, cannot compute, querying database, do not know how to respond to this. And that meant, Now this gaping void was really raw and really open in a way that it had never been before. And I began to look back on my life and the type of person that I was, and I started to realize, oh, this has been there all along, and it's been growing, this kind of black hole. And what I mean about when I say that is, I had a lot of self-imposed conditions on myself my entire life, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, but women especially. So the cassette tape in my mind would say something like, I'm kind of worth loving, but I'd be truly worth loving if I lost 10 pounds. Or if I were a better musician, I mean, like, I'm an adequate musician, but I quit piano and, you know, I'm not these other people in my family. Or, you know what, I'm going to go back to school now. I'm done having my kids and I'm going to get a degree. And, well, I've got the degree now. I feel like an imposter. Should I go for an advanced degree? You can fill in the blank with anything you want because we all have these things. We all have these little holes, these little messages that we take from our families of origin of here's what your worth is predicated upon. And I had internalized those messages all related specifically to that moment of being dropped off in my dad's driveway at 10 and my mom driving away. And it was that kind of intensely painful feeling that in some way I wasn't worth loving. And I began to look over my life and say, I've imposed all of these conditions, and yet as I tick every box, the hole isn't closing. How do I close the hole?
Well, that's where spiritual stuff is supposed to come in and be like the crazy glue that puts you back together again. But even in that world, Lorelai, you had, I don't know, what's the word? I'm not, you know, there was some disassembling happening in that area in your life as well.
There was, yeah, there was. Because I had looked at God in much the same way I had looked at my mother and thought, okay, well, Mom left and I'm at home and I'm kind of taking care of these younger siblings because there isn't really a mother figure now, and Dad is away quite a bit because he's working. So I guess what I've got is God. I've learned that since I was little. I learned that in Sunday school, and I know that and I believe that. However, if I misstep, then the last person around is going to be gone. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be judged, and he's going to be gone. And so I began to kind of, from a very young age, start to live that way. And, you know, I haven't read my scriptures today. You know,
uh-oh,
black mark. Mm-hmm. I haven't written in my journal today. I mean, can you imagine this at 11 years old? Like, imposing these kind of validators on yourself. Like, I have to do all of these things or I will lose the love of God, like I lost Mom, or I lost, you know, because with the divorce and moving away, I also lost, you know, my granny and my aunts and uncles that I was close to. Sure. Not by any estrangement, just by virtue of proximity. And I just kind of realized that, okay, I'm now like a fully grown woman and I've developed self-confidence and an incredibly sharp skill set, but that foundational layer isn't there. And what do I do? How do I get that back? And that began to morph my relationship with God, because my religious upbringing had been exactly like these lists I was making in my head. Now, for some people, I realize they look at that and this saved me and it pulled me out of the mire. And if I do these five things, I know I'm always happy and that works for me. And hallelujah. And that's beautiful if that's how it works for them. But in my mind, it was just always a reason I was falling short and not good enough.
Man.
And so then Sunday became a very, very painful day.
Sure.
Because I was going through that list on a loop in my head of, am I good enough at this? Should I have thought that? Should I have not thought that? Should I have said something that I wanted to say? Well, now that I've said something I wanted to say and someone's rolled their eyes in Sunday school, well, maybe I don't really belong here. Well, you know, and it just played endlessly. So I started to try those things. And I started to just take inventory of what I really felt and what I really believed. And I let some of those things go. I let those impositions go one by one, like a 45-year-old woman going back to kindergarten. If you're sick, you can stay in bed on a Sunday and rest, and you're not going to get hit by lightning. I know that that sounds so severe and so binary, but that was how my thought process worked, because I was terrified of losing the love of a Heavenly Father that I thought was always my backup. And what I came to realize was there wasn't anything I could do to jeopardize that love. No matter what I did.
So would you say then, and by the way, let me just remind our listeners, we're chatting with Lorelai Backman. She is an author, a freelance writer, musician. She's a writer and social media coordinator for CBC's hit radio show, Randy's Vinyl Tap, that her dad hosts, Randy Backman. Lorelai, would you say that there is a direct correlation between the way things went down between you and your mom and just your overall processing of the concept of love, period?
Sure, absolutely, yeah. I would. It was very, it's always been very easy for me to say, well, of course I love unconditionally. Of course I love my children unconditionally. My love is not a meritocracy. If they make a mistake, I hope that they're going to come in late on a Friday night and sit on the end of my bed and tell me about it. And so far, I've been fortunate it's worked out that way. But it's probably worked out that way because they don't live in fear of losing my love.
Right.
And for me, that was a very real fear. So, of course, unconditional love exists, but it exists for everyone else. It yeah. doesn't exist for Lorelai. That's honestly what I thought.
Yeah. Lorelai, do you have any, I mean, is there such a thing as a recurring theme each Mother's Day that comes up for you?
Well, now there is. Now it's kind of empowerment. I do what I want to do on Mother's Day. I usually go off the grid with some of my kids. We have a nice meal. We get out in nature. But it took me kind of deciding and pulling back on the reins and saying, this is what I want this to be. I want it to be about today in the present. It's not dependent on a partner doing something for me. It's not dependent on my path or my birth order or anything else. I mean, you mentioned at the beginning of this, the introduction of this, that, you know, saying to your children,
oh no,
well, it's not my mother, so you guys can handle it. I think,
yes,
I think if the men of the world knew, and you're not alone, I hear it probably a dozen times every Mother's Day, in my neighborhood, at lunch with friends. My husband says that I'm not his mother. He doesn't have to do anything. I think if people knew the hurt that that statement causes and how much women talk about it, this is anecdotal, but in my mind, it's indisputable. It's not called your Mother's Day. It's called Mother's Day. And it's called Mother's Day because women have a beautiful, most women, I know there are exceptions and I know there are unhealthy people out there, but women have an innate ability to care and love for people. Women dominate caregiver roles in every sector of our society. So I'm going to say that a card or a kind word or a visit or a thank you won't kill anybody, whether she's your biological mother or not. Booking a brunch is not a deal breaker. And I don't think it's going to sound preachy. Don't absolve yourself of showing kindness on Mother's Day over a technicality about whether or not she's really your mother or not, because mothers can be scout leaders and teachers and block parents and the woman at the end of the block or your auntie. Or if you are a woman who doesn't have children, you may mother, you know, statistically, women are going to be the caregivers for their in-laws as well as they age. So let's say it's Mother's Day in this very big cosmic spirit of caring and appreciating the nurturing qualities of women, instead of saying someone is or isn't my mother or my own mother left or whatever. Like, let's take the beauty of that day and just say every one of our lives in some way has been shaped by a nurturing, mothering force, whether or not it's our biological mother.
I think I just got schooled.
Boom!
Okay. Lorelai, we're talking about Mother's Day, and you said something to me when we were speaking before about the fact that, anecdotally, I think we've already talked about this a little bit, but that your situation is you've spoken to a lot of mothers who don't look forward to Mother's Day. And mm-hmm. what that... Tim, why are you nodding and freaking out?
I was going to say, it can be... My wife has a very non-good relationship with her mother.
A non-good relationship?
Yes, that's because I'm a drama teacher. And the very first Mother's Day, I wanted to make it very special for her, and it actually turned out to be very painful for her. Not because of what I did, but just Mother's Day in general.
Triggers for her.
And it took a couple of years before right. it was something she could deal with.
So you think this is a bigger deal than maybe most think, Lorelai, that Mother's Day, when it rolls around, it shackles a lot of women?
I think it's difficult on a lot of levels. I mean, whether it be that you have a tenuous relationship with your own mother, or you've lost your mother, or it's the first year without your mother, or just the guilt that women carry about balancing work and home life and all of those kind of things. Motherhood can be very difficult. And I would say that, you know, kind of like what Tim said there, you know, it took me a couple of years to just relax when it was coming up and accept the little sweaty fistfuls of dandelions from my children and just think, you know, this is the moment where it's not about anything else. It's about this tenderness and this little child coming to me, and I'm going to listen and I'm going to pay attention and we're going to reframe this. But it took me a couple of years to do that.
Okay, let's get a little Dr. Phil. Ready?
Okay. All right.
Seriously, I would like, I'm just trying to imagine you at the local grocery store with your shopping cart doing whatever you're doing. Of course, right away I'm being described as sexist because I'm putting you in that position. But you're doing the grocery thing and you're going through and you turn the corner and bam, there's your mom. When was the last time you saw your mom?
10 years ago.
So you see her. What does that feel like? And what would what would you say to her? Like, how would that moment go down, Lorelai?
I think I would probably say, you know, hi, what are you doing here? And chat with her a little bit. And I think I would say, I hope that you're well and that life is going okay for you. She lives in another country. She met a man on the internet and moved away 10 years ago, and I haven't seen her since. It wouldn't be venomous, and it wouldn't be angry. It would be as if I were running into an old neighbor.
But is there anything that would, in your mind right now, at this point in your life, and we all, look, we know that as time goes by, there are certain things that get revealed to us, and thankfully all is not revealed on day one because we need time to process this stuff. Mm-hmm. So at this point in your life, do you think there's anything that's been left unspoken or some fog in the air that needs to be cleared?
No, I have written her and told her that I am grateful for everything that she did for me growing up and wow. that I have forgiven her for the way that we parted. I wouldn't say she took responsibility for those things. She more deflected all of those kind of things, but that's not the point. Forgiveness was not about what it might do to her. It was about what it did for me. And that was letting it go and saying, it is what it is, and here's the real truth, Drew. I was at a get-together with a woman a few years ago, and our daughters were best friends. And I wouldn't say this woman is big on social graces, and we were standing at a table, and she looked at me and she said, you know, I know a bit of your story, and I lost my mother to cancer when I was young, and that was really hard, but I mean, your mother chose to leave. Oy. And it may seem incredibly tactless, but the truth is, in that moment I thought, you know what, she is exactly right. My mother chose to leave and flee when the going got tough, but that was her decision and her unhealthy frame of mind, and it had nothing whatsoever to do with me as a human being. It was the first moment that I thought, this wasn't about something in me that was unlovable or flawed. This was about a broken, hurting human being making a poor choice. And in a way, I have nothing to do with that. I've read a lot of shame and vulnerability researcher Brené Brown, and one of the things that she says in there that was pretty life-changing for me, she's written several books, but you know, one of her mantras is there are no prerequisites for worthiness, and that's a pretty profound idea. Think about that. There are no prerequisites for worthiness. So how does that factor into a fractured relationship with a parent? Well, I mean, the idiom, as silly as it is, a face that only a mother could love, indicates that you are the child of a parent who, no matter what the circumstance, would love you madly. No matter what you did, would love you madly, that there would always be grace and redemption for you as a human being. So when a parent makes decisions that say, you know, not only you don't matter or you're not worth sticking around for, or worse, you know, worst case scenario, you're mistreatable, how do you begin to understand your worth? You understand that your worth is not given to you by your parents. That your worth is inherent. No one can give it to you or take it away. The fact that you're a human being, your worth is fixed. That can't be changed. Hmm. So taking that with what my friend said at the party was the moment that I thought, this is not a deficit in me, and I need to move forward now and kind of live wholeheartedly as a person who has a right to be here on the earth that is doing the best I can with the cards that I've been dealt. And is it uncomfortable when people say, oh, I used to see your mom come around and she never does anymore, what happened? It's always going to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It is. That's always a paper cut. But it isn't soul-destroying. It's just a paper cut. It's just a broken human being that made a poor choice. And I feel like I have been able to be the ender of so many of those things that in my life, the universe has trusted me to be an ender of that. You feel like fleeing right now? This is not the time to flee. Stay the course. Go outside and breathe for 5 minutes and come back in. It's going to be okay. These are your people. They need you. There's a lot of little people that need me. There were for many years. They're grown now. But, you know, your worth is fixed. And it isn't about your broken parent. It really isn't. That's what filled that hole for me. And reading it, I believed it. And I felt it as a searing truth when I read those words. Like, how have I not come across this before? This is what I needed. This was the answer that I needed, and it took me so long to find it.
I need to ask, do you book yourself out for speaking at certain events? Because the stuff that has just come out of your mouth in the last 10 minutes is gold.
I don't. I told you I'm the introverted Bachman.
Just incredible stuff. Well, that's why I asked, because I knew, I know a little bit about you. We've gotten to know each other a little bit, and what a journey. And the way you're able to concisely put this stuff together using things like words, phenomenal. Yeah, you should have a radio show. There might be one soon, available.
You know, I agreed to do it hoping that anyone out there who has an experience similar to mine can know that it's not a deficit in them. And if they're younger than me and still on that path, don't let shame ride shotgun, because it doesn't deserve that seat.
Listen to this.
You know, you go forward and you open your heart and you do the very best you can. You take those walls down and you love the very best you can, and you know that your worth is fixed. It can't be switched. It can't be changed.
Let me just tell you, even my meathead, a partner, buddy, pal, engineer, friend, Tim the Tool, is writing down. I don't think I've ever seen you do that. You just pulled out your phone and started writing down what she said.
Not fixed.
Oh, man. Shame riding shotgun. I love it.
Oh, that's Brené Brown. That's not my original quote.
That's okay. That's okay.
That's Brené Brown. Okay, that's her thing. But, yeah.
No. So, thank you. And let me just say this. Straight up, you are, from what I can get, a really great mother, so happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you, Lorelai.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, bye-bye. Bye. Lorelai Bachman on The Drew Marshall Show.